You're listening to the Youth Crick Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at WUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at WUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
If I told you about her, the princess without voice, what would I say?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I'm your host, Kale Smith. Joining me this week is Gina Versa from the Waffle Press.
Hey, how you doing? Good to be here in this new year.
Yep. And while it is 2018, Gene, we still are going to go over some 2017 stuff, particularly movies that came out in special engagements in Los Angeles and New York, but are just now opening where I'm at. So this week we are going to be talking about The Shape of Water, which has actually been out in nationwide for a while, but we just haven't on the show. And we just haven't had a chance to talk about it on the show. And then later in the show, we'll talk about Paul Thomas Anderson's new movie, Phantom Thread. And then we'll talk about The Post. Just kind of end things out. And starting with Eugene, why do you love The Shape of Water so much?
Well, it was my favorite movie of last year. Can't believe it's last year now. But it's, I think it's like Del Toro at his most Del Toro. Enis as the black and white dancing show. But it, you know, it's just him and monsters, and, you know, a studio just gave him a lump sum of money and just said, go wild. And, you know, it's kind of like a passion project he's been trying to make for a while. He's talked about this. I think he had like an idea, maybe like in 2012, where he said he wanted to do a black and white movie, which I think he confirmed that this was it, his black and white movie. And, you know, he can do black and white, but, you know, the fact he got it made, and, you know, it's just, you know, such a perfect film. You know, Vic, and just everything great about Del Toro in one movie. Kind of timely, too, I guess.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic all the way through. And I currently, at the moment, have it on my number one, too, as well as the best movie of the year, because not only is it timely, but it's also it's very interesting. And even as I was watching it the second time around this week, it's very interesting how Del Toro, like, puts things in the movie that are kind of subtle, like, I don't know if you caught that, you know, when Richard Jenkins is turning his painting over and his, like, publicist or distributor was, like, wanting him to, you know, paint the Jell-O green to make it more, ooh, like, family.
Yeah.
And then later in the movie when Michael Shannon's character is, like, at, like, you know, Michael Shannon is not, like, in love with the color green in the movie. Like, he, because of the creature, and of course he gets, you know, and of course in the movie, his wife, like, comes in with, like, a Jell-O parfait that's green.
Yeah.
So it's just, and I know it's small moments, but it's moments like that that make me love writing and directing in movies, because it's just, you know, a director thinking constantly about his movie and what to put in the scene to make it that much more impactful, to make it that much more, like, oh, and just keep adding more stuff in, you know, and stuff that you get.
Like reinforcing ideas.
Sorry?
Like reinforcing ideas a lot?
Yes, and using those to kind of build, like, you know, the characters as they're building the tension or relief in characters. Because green in this movie kind of does represent, you know, the creature and, you know, the water itself, like the because it's, you know, because water is kind of like a, in this movie, it's kind of like a, it's kind of looking like a teal color. Mm-hmm. And just so every time, like, the character is surrounded by green in his Cadillac or in the office or just anywhere, and he's just constantly reminded of his failure to keep this creature under control. So it's that, it's just those kind of, you know, things to heighten the character. And also what I also like about this movie is every character gets a scene in this, you know, 2-hour movie to basically develop them even further. Rather it's, you know, Michael Jenkins and his minor subplot with the guy at the pie shop, or Sally Hawkins with or even Octavia Spencer and all the conversations we know about her husband, building that character forward. So when we see him finally in the third act of the movie, we finally get a sense of this. We don't need, you know, a character introduction. We already know who this character is and what he's going to do. And even more reinforcing kind of the biblical story of that Michael Shannon, you know, brings up, you know, towards Delilah and Elsa at the beginning of the movie. So it's just all really, it's just, for me, it's what I love. And this is why I also really, not to get into another 3-hour conversation, but this is why I also like Star Wars as well. It's like,
okay,
little moments as well.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, it's a very nuanced film, Shape of Water and Star Wars as well. Yeah. But you know, I think some things I didn't even catch that you were saying for Shape of Water. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's that deep of a film.
It is. And I know it's, you know, I know that's what the job of the director is. I mean, even in Baby Driver, there's things in, or in every Edgar Wright movie, there's always something you can pick on every time you rewatch those movies. But I feel like that's what the director should do, is to constantly keep adding things in the frame. So when you go back, you have a whole new experience every time you rewatch the movie.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, so you brought up that Del Toro always wanted to do a black and white movie. So, and he finally does, or a little bit.
For a scene, yeah. Mm-hmm. For a scene.
But the movie montages a lot of old monster movies. Even the score, Alexandre Desplat's score, is very reminiscent of science fiction 50s movies.
Mm-hmm.
And this,
I forgot he does the score as well. Just spot.
Well, it's their first collaboration. Usually he works with, I think, Marco Beltrami or, or Danny Elfman, or he's worked with a couple other, he's worked with a lot of composers over the years, but yeah, this was their first collaboration. And I think it was a perfect match. But getting into the movie, what did you think about the performances of the film?
The performances are great. I don't know to praise Doug Jones or Sally Hawkins first, but I'll go with both. You know, like, Doug Jones is, like, always great in, like, everything he does. Like, I wish he was the voice of the Silver Surfer, because you know, it matches it well. Yeah, he's even, you know, he's good in, like, everything he does. He has such a good presence.
You don't like
you know, even bad movies. What's that?
You don't like Larry Fishburne's voice in Silver Surfer?
I don't see the Silver Surfer's voice as, like, as imposing as it was for Lawrence Fishburne. I like Lawrence Fishburne, like, just, you know, I love Lawrence Fishburne, but it, I don't know, when I'm reading comics and the Silver Surfer comes up, I see more, something like more, like Abe Sapien-y. Like, it's not as loud, it's more like cold and like soft in a way. So that's how I always called the Silver Surfer. My ideal Silver Surfer is Keanu Reeves, you know?
Oh yeah, that could work.
Yeah, it'd be a nice callback to Point Break as well.
Yeah, that would. Yeah, that would be great.
But anyway, just everything he does is awesome. And you know, Sally Hawkins, you know, if her character, actually both the characters don't speak in a way, one growls, but you know, for her, she like carries this film without saying like a word of dialogue.
I mean, she, you know, does sign language.
Right. Yeah. I'm sorry. Excuse me. Where she, because yeah, sign is dialogue. Excuse me. Where she,
I mean,
she
doesn't speak in dialogue.
Right. No speaking dialogue. I correct myself. So yeah, you know, the fact that like she carries, you know, this character, and like really gives her like such a life and soul is just amazing, you know?
Yeah. And it is an incredible performance because especially in the scene where, I should say full spoilers, even though we haven't spoiled anything, I just don't want to spoil anything on accident without the spoiler warning up. But the spoiler is Sally Hawkins is trying to convince Richard Jenkins' character to help her, you know, free the creature from the facility. And she has that amazing, you know, emotional scene where she's, you know, doing the sign language and he's describing and he's like saying what she's saying, and you're just feeling everything that she's saying through the performance without like the subtitles or anything. You just feel that, you know, you're feeling what she believes and you're feeling her point in all the point in it.
Yeah.
I hope
she gets some recognition for that.
I think she will. I think she will. I think this will be, I don't think this is a year where she'll win the Oscar, but I think she'll get a nomination for sure.
Yeah. She's great and everything. Also, commend, because I love Michael Shannon, like, but so villainous in this one. And even for, like, his villains, this was, like, a higher notch than usually how, like, you know, I wouldn't say creepy, but, like, how, like, disturbing his villains are, you know?
Yeah, I will say, you know, if there is one fault I had with the movie, is it is written very ham-fisted. His part is a little bit ham-fisted, like it's really trying to force the point. But Michael Shannon plays the role so well that you don't really care that much. That it's like overly, like a little over the top written. It's Michael Shannon like giving that good of a performance. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, it's, you know, his performance is with other. His performance has, you know, there's scenes in there where he's just not talking that much. You just see him thinking, and it's cut so well with, you know, scenes that have come before, rather if it's talking to his, you know, superior or, you know, or like having, you know, having, or after having a conversation with Michael Stolberg's character, it's real. Like he just has moments where he's just sitting there thinking, not talking much, and you just feel what he's thinking. You can feel the anger stemming off, and it's just great acting from Shannon.
Yeah, and he's awesome in like everything. So, it, you know, I'm glad to see him like in this film. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really happy, and I'm glad he was utilized. His villainy was utilized very well, which I can't say for everything he's done, but I thought he was used very well. I thought he did a fantastic job. And I always liked Michael Shannon. Last year, my favorite movie of the year was Midnight Specials, and I really liked him in that movie as an appearance. So I'm happy that he gave another really great performance.
Awesome.
Yeah, what else can we say? We both love the movie, so it's hard to like have any discuss. It's hard to discuss the movie because we both love it so much.
What's your take on the car when he buys the Cadillac?
what's my take on when he buys the Cadillac?
Yeah. Because I was a little like, I don't know what to make of that scene.
Oh.
Like, I know there's a point to it, but.
I always think of it as, you know, it's a manifestation of his egotism and what's the other word? You know, it's a manifestation of his toxic masculinity.
Ooh, okay.
And it's been violated because something was taken from him, something that he was in control of.
It's like a Freudian thing.
Yeah, I think it's a Freudian thing.
Okay. It's compensating for something else.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you have to understand. I think, and I'm not a car person, but I think Cadillacs like a huge thing during the 50s.
Yeah, no, that was a big car in the 50s. That was like the car.
Yeah, I mean, you have to understand. This is a person who describes his middle finger as a pussy finger.
Yeah, no, of course. So. Yeah. that's his character.
Yeah, and when that is violated because the creature was taken, and of course, mm-hmm. in that same scene, Richard Jenkins busts his car. Like it all is going into like, you know, the mindset of everything is being taken, everything's being, you know, like degraded to him. Even his military officer degrades him in a human way, not his toxic masculinity, but his humanity.
Yeah. It'll make him like a living in a parallel universe, which is a great thing. Which is, you know.
Can you say that one more time?
Oh, I said you know, it's such a great scene where the military man. It was a really great scene.
Yeah, it's a really good scene. It's a very good scene in the movie. It's a good scene because we're talking about the one at the end towards the third act, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just checking. It's a great scene because it puts kind of the war in a perspective through the movie's eyes. And how the movie views the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
And it views it as, you know, this way of it views it in this, you know, this, you know, excuse me, I'm at a loss for words. It puts it in this paradigm of like, this is how it was to this military. And of course the military mm-hmm. are in charge, or they are the last standing, you know, of every science experiment. And of course, you know, military, I'm not, and I don't mean this in a terrible way, but I don't think it's never ever wise to put the military in charge of science.
Yeah. I mean,
and I don't mean that in a terrible way. I just mean, it's always best to let scientists kind of make the moral decisions.
Right. And that, you know, always happens. Something always happens when they don't listen to a scientist in a movie. So
yeah. Oh yeah.
many folks back you up.
Yeah. I mean, stuff did happen. A creature got loose. But yeah, I'm just fascinated by the movie. I saw this movie a month ago at an early screening for the film. I think it was like an award screening for the movie that they had for the credit for press and people like from the for people to kind of check out before the nominations were completed, and I loved it then, and I saw it last week, and I'm just still fascinated even more. I think it's one of the better movies of the year, and I just love all the characters and how basically at the end of the movie the people standing are the old gay character in Richard Jenkins, and then the black woman. They're sitting there, or they're standing at the edge of the pier, wondering what has happened to their friend Elsa, who has, you know, also been damaged by life. So I just love So yeah, I don't know. I love this movie in every capacity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's my favorite movie. So
yeah,
the year.
Mm-hmm. So with that said, I think. Are you ready to move on to Phantom Thread?
Very long time.
Of course.
You look beautiful. Very beautiful. I have things I want to do. Things I simply cannot do without you.
Reynolds has made my dreams come true, and I have given him what he desires most in return. Every piece of me. Why are you not married?
Her arrival has cast a very long shadow.
She's barely looked at you this evening, has she?
May I warn you of something? My brother can feel cursed, that love is doomed for him.
I don't like the fabric.
Maybe one day you'll change your taste.
Maybe I like my own taste.
Just enough to get you into trouble.
All right, so Gene, you're going to have to help me on this because I forgot to ask you before we did the show, but can you? I missed like the first 2 or 3 minutes of the movie because I had to, like, there was just traffic getting to the theater.
Okay.
And I just had, and I had some like trouble like getting my ticket. So do you remember what happened in the first 2 minutes of the movie? Like the setup?
I believe it's just like the Reynolds Woodcock going through the house, and I think it's like just like credits of him making a dress. I'm having a little difficulty remembering the first
thing. Okay. All right, that's fine, because I walked in like just as he was like leaving the house. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and also the other issue is I'm kind of like in the middle of this for this movie. I love what it's going for, but I don't really care about it that much.
Ooh, okay.
So, Gene, I'm going to put you on the spot, and why don't you just go ahead and tell what are your thoughts on Phantom Thread before I go deep into mine?
Well, it's a very acquired taste, like some Paul Thomas Anderson movies. There are, you know, I love Paul Thomas Anderson. All his films are great. There are some films that just don't translate well to people. I mean, if you look at like Magnolia, you still have people not getting the frog. You know, you still have people. The only takeaway from that movie is the frogs, which, I mean, it's a mysterious scene, but, you know, that's their only thing about the movie is the frogs. And, you know, sometimes he's like kind of, I wouldn't say weird, but kind of a little perplexing sometimes. And, I don't know. Yeah, it's, you have to watch his movies in a certain mindset, I will say. If they're movies that rain frogs or films about, you know, the porn industry, or like a movie where the wife poisons someone with mushrooms, you know, they're all their own thing. So I will say that.
Yeah, and I think
mushrooms are how they how was it. They're into mushrooms. We'll say that.
Yeah, that's, and I was in a crowded theater when I saw this last night, because in Atlanta there was only like a handful of theaters that were showing the movie, and there's still only a handful of theaters showing the movie. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting at the Midtown Arts Cinema watching this with full of people, and it was like mostly dead silent for the laugh. And then spoilers, and then spoilers, the movie ends with Ima poisoning Daniel Day-Lewis's character with mushrooms, I don't think to kill him, although it was kind of ambiguous like what was going to happen at that point.
Yeah, it's a. Someone, I heard the best description of Phantom Thread, where it's like someone was like, "It's kinky as hell," is what their thing was.
It is kinky as hell. Even though I never thought you could, I never thought you could get kinky being sick.
Some people surprise you.
I know. But yeah, that was kind of the oddity of the movie, because you could feel like the moment Daniel Day-Lewis's character realizes what's happening and what he has eaten, and then he has that moment of acceptance, everyone just bursts into laughter.
Right.
Because it's just like, it's so odd and awkward that you are just like, okay, we're going for this. And then the movie ends 5 minutes later.
You just have to go with it.
But yeah, one of the, and you're right about acquired taste. I think that's what happened with his last movie as well, Inherent Vice, is that you kind of had to be in the mindset for a movie that doesn't really have, I don't think Inherent Vice has a narrative drive. I don't think it does.
I don't think so. It's very like, darn it, sorry. I'm getting used to the iPhone. It's very kind of voyeuristic, you know, a little abstract. So his style in that movie was, you know, a little abstract. So
yeah. So going to this, where the movie is beautifully shot, wonderfully acted. And then you get down to like trying to critique the story. The story is more about, or the way I kind of interpret the story, you can tell me, Gene, if I'm on the right track or not. For me, the story is about a woman who's trying to poison the childish thing, the child, the kind of, you know, the man child out of Daniel Day-Lewis.
You could definitely see it as that. I guess, you know, it's, I think it's more centered around her than him. I could agree with that.
And the reason why I say that is because the movie, or the dialogue references a lot, or Ima calls him a lot in the first third of the movie, a child. You know, the child that's just whiny, and the sister doesn't want to do anything about it, even though she's kind of fed up with it as well.
Yeah.
And she finally reaches her breaking point when he just loses it at his own birthday dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we get the mushroom. And afterwards, she sees that the psychological effect of him nearly dying can change him, and that's where we start on the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
And then when he finally, you know, gets more and more like back to his old self, he gets poisoned again. And I think that's the whole idea of the movie, is that she is trying to make him more of a husband, in the same way that he was trying to make her his kind of like, into like his model / mannequin that he can put dresses on.
Yeah. He learns to be a better husband. Tries to be a better husband through these mushrooms, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. That's kind of his arc. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an odd movie. I still am trying to think a lot about it. But the thing is, I still the thing with Paul Thomas Anderson, and all of his movies look great, but this one particularly looked great. And it just has this nice filter to it. So it's just interesting. And all the technical stuff is really great, and it's all centered around a person, you know, being kinked by mushrooms, essentially. Yeah,
pretty much.
I don't know what that says, but I don't know. I thought it was kind of an interesting movie. It's an interesting I almost call it like an interesting discussion on the roles of marriage.
Yeah.
But do you have any more thoughts on Phantom Thread?
Did you see it like in, did you see it in like film or 70 millimeter or something?
I think I saw this in digital. I'm pretty sure I saw this in digital, unfortunately.
I will say it looks really nice in 70 millimeter. So if anyone has a chance to see it like that, it's really cool.
Yeah, I was, I hoped and prayed because I was looking at like Showtimes and there was 70 millimeter prints going across the country, not just LA and New York. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of hopeful, but as far as I know, they did not do a 70 millimeter print here or 70 millimeter release here in Atlanta. As far as I know, that I might be wrong, but last I checked, they did not do 70 millimeter here.
Okay. Well, that's fair. Yeah.
But yeah, the 35 millimeter cinematography looks incredible.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So one more thing. I really hope this isn't Daniel Day-Lewis's last movie.
Oh yeah, no, it's yeah. I mean, I don't know. He said that his last movie was going to be like, I forgot what movie, it was Lincoln or something, and he came back. I mean, for all we know, it could be, but. You know, you never know. There could be a role that he'll enjoy. So, I mean, he'll like enough to like come out of retirement. So,
I mean, he already looks like he could. You know, I don't know if you saw the Golden Globes, but he already looks like he could play a comic book character. he almost looks like Sinestro a little bit.
Sinestro, yeah, I could see him as Sinestro.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just. I hate it because he's such a great actor and I know he can, I've heard he can sometimes be a little hard to deal with because it's a method acting and still I just always appreciate all of his work. Even in movies, I'm like, that's okay. Like, yeah, I like his work a lot and it'll be sad. It'll be sad if this is the last one. So. Because it's fantastic. It's a fantastic way to go out, but still, I just hope there's more Daniel Day-Lewis, even if we have to wait like 5 or 10 more years.
No, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we're kind of moving along pretty quickly. So let's get on to the post.
Okay. So
can I ask you a hypothetical question?
Oh dear, I don't like hypothetical questions.
Well, I don't think you're gonna like the real one either.
Do you have the papers?
Not yet.
This is a devastating security breach that was leaked out of the Pentagon. The most highly classified documents of the war.
Very, very, very timely out of all the films.
Yeah.
Out of everything. You know, you could really relate to some of those characters. Huh?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't work exclusively in press. Like, I don't consider what I do press. This is more like this is blogging for me. But, but yeah, I always, you know, look at the, you know, that hashtag fake news and I'm like, this is problematic.
Yeah.
And then then, you know, of course I think Spielberg also saw this at the whole fake news. Every time fake news is brought up in either our president's tweets or in speeches or what, or every time he talks, I think Spielberg saw those and also thought it was problematic. Deeply, and it is an understatement. It's problematic.
Yeah, he doesn't talk; he spews just garbage.
Yeah, it's like a vomit of hate.
I think this was the movie. I guess the country needed right now. I try to recommend everyone to see it. It is very timely, but It's also like very, I guess, I wouldn't maybe like inspiring, maybe like heartening, makes you believe in something that, you know, this is how good reporting is done, and the power of like the press, and you know how, how you know it could change the world in a way.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, the whole idea of the movie is the press. It is the last line of defense when it comes to critiquing our emperors. In not, mm-hmm. and I don't mean to call presidents or people in power emperors, but that's really kind of the analogy that it is. It's the last line of defense because, you know, because when everyone holds power, everyone uses their full presidency, or they abuse their power, it's up to the press to basically create the social justice that will, you know, that will keep people aware and keep people fighting for, you know, their rights.
Of course. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, it's, it was like, I'm so glad Steven Spielberg decided to do this like before Ready Player One. And you know, the time to do this, and like, you know, it's a very, I guess, political statement by him. And this is just so great in the film. Like the fact Nixon's only like shot in like a silhouette from a distance, and it's his actual audio with a body double, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really smart, decision. And
well, it creates an eeriness towards
him. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like this otherworldly evil, which, you know, he was.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was, you know, it's just so well made. And like, I'm so glad John Williams came back, because he's been kind of absent, well, understandably, from the last few Spielberg movies. Like, I don't think he's been on a project with him since Lincoln.
He's
obviously been Star Wars.
Well, actually, he did the BFG.
He did the BFG?
Mm-hmm. Yes. He did bow out of Ready Player
Bridge One. Bridge of Spies.
Well, yeah, Bridge of Spies, because of not only Star Wars, but because I think he was also having health issues at the time.
Oh, of course.
But, because, okay. I mean, everyone kind of forgets, he's like, I think he's like 85 or in his late
80s. Yeah, he's up there.
Yeah. And so they brought in Thomas Noonan for Bridge of Spies, and I think Newman did a good job, and mm-hmm.
Just the music's just like so incendiary in the post.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for this one he did an excellent job in just
I think like Spielberg brings out the best in John Williams, so that's, it's cool to see them again.
Yeah,
and vice versa.
And Spielberg only, or I'm sorry, Williams only explicitly works with either Spielberg or Star Wars now. Like,
yeah, or I guess, yeah, if it has the Lucasfilm brand, yeah. But he did do the Book Thief as well.
Yeah, and that wasn't, I did not see that movie, but I thought that was an interesting choice for him to kind of go back to and work on.
Right. Yeah, I think he does like other films on occasion. Like he did the Book Thief. He did like Memories of a Geisha. So mm-hmm. Yeah, he's been known to do other stuff, you know. But yeah. It was great to see them back together. We'll say that. And I was going to ask you, did your theater cheer at any moments, like when they decided to publish? Or my theater was. I don't know if that. Or anything.
I saw this at 9 or 10 o'clock last night, so there wasn't that many people at my screening, because I saw I can only see Phantom Thread in the post at like either 7 or 9 or 7 or 10. So yeah, I could not. I didn't have a full screening during mine, and also, I don't know if this was completely a problem with the projector at my theater, but a lot of shots in the movie were not completely in focus like they should have been.
Oh, okay. That's not good.
Yeah. Which is like infuriating, because you come out of Phantom Thread and it's like, and it's like, oh, like Phantom Thread is like beautifully projected and it was beautifully shot and all that. And you go into this and you're like, is this like, was this like a choice to keep things out of focus? Was it a choice to, like, was that, or what is it, the projector like just not being calibrated correctly? Either way, the only times the audience kind of reacted to things were like some cringe moments of like people like kind of degrading Kay, or the occasional comment about the Vietnam War at the beginning of the movie, mm-hmm. where they were like, where Matthew Reese's character goes, well, it's about the same. The war is about mm-hmm. the same as progression. And of course, Greenwood's like, well, we just sent 100,000 more people and you're saying the same. So I think it's worse. So
right.
there were some people that were like, yeah, this war is not, there was a couple of people that kind of uttered out of their mouth, yeah, this is war is not working.
Mm.
And yeah, so there wasn't much of an audience reaction, but I did smile a lot, or I was tense a lot. I smiled a lot at the end, and then I was tense throughout the film because the movie does a phenomenal job of building up the stakes.
Oh yeah, of course. It's very tense. Like, it's kind of like a play in a way. It's like almost in one room for most of the movie, and yeah, it's super tense.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is. And well, it's super tense because because of the buildup of, you know, what Nixon is going to do to the New York Times, because they're being taken out by Nixon and his party. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, you feel for the Post because they, you know, because you hear that they're kind of, you know, struggling a little bit, like their stock is not as good as it was mm-hmm. before. It's all like,
yeah,
like a lot of the movie is built up to state. And then you get to real stakes where they are on the verge of publishing and things could go horribly wrong for them.
Mm-hmm. No, like getting sued. And mm-hmm. I will say, just adding to just how the Nixon is using the film, he's like Saruman type supervillain, you know? Like
right.
how they portray him, which how he was in real life. And, you know, I'm saying this as someone that like lives, so, you know, it's you know, pretty accurate to how he was in, you know, actuality.
Yeah. What, can you say that one more time? I'm sorry.
Oh, I said yeah, someone that like grew up in that lives in the town he grew up in. It's very accurate to how he was in the presidency.
Okay, got you. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, and well, I mean, just from history reports, he got more and more of a shadow figure as his presidency went along.
He was a very paranoid person. And yeah, he's like, you know, the movie portrays, you know, just that, you know, like that character says, you know, he's like a SOB, like a, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. He adds to the stakes as well.
Mm-hmm. And what I loved a lot about this movie is it is centered on Meryl Streep's character, Kay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we can't not talk about her.
She, you know, the whole, I argue the whole arc of the movie is about her inserting her power and her finally coming to terms with, you know, she has to utilize her power to make tough decisions.
Right.
And this is, you know, and this is what it's like to, you know, make mm-hmm. tough decisions, especially during tough times when a war is going on and you could, mm. and there is a danger of not only you going to jail, but you could hurt, you know, people overseas, you know, especially since the movie makes comment that her own son was in the Vietnam War.
Right.
And, you know, she can relate to, you know, and she can relate to that notion of other, you know, mothers that have their other sons in the war currently. And so, yeah, it's one of those. So, yeah, I mean, it's a great performance by her, and it's a very well-written role. Like,
yeah, no, Meryl Streep's great. She'll probably get another Academy Award for it, no doubt. And yeah, she portrays it well. You know, you can see her conflict, her pain, especially being like a female, owner of a newspaper at that time. You know, very, very, very inspiring. You know.
Especially when everyone else in the room is a man, and she, people are paranoid when she comes to work. Like I shouldn't say paranoid, but feel uncomfortable with her presence.
Right.
Because to them it's either, you know, sexism or it's the, we've never had this before. What's this going to be like?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's just a very interesting. I really like this movie. If there was only one thing I didn't really care, if there was one thing I wish the movie had done more, is I wish we would have seen more of the court case.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of glosses over it a little bit, but yeah, I mean, it's understandable.
The reason why I say that is because we get, you know, moments before the trial of people commenting on, you know, making absurd claims of, you know, trying to compare this to D-Day, or, you know, really if it was, you know, releasing info about D-Day or whatnot. And while it is absurd, it's an interesting question. I think it's quite an interesting question to ask, is like, where is the line? Where's the line? And while the audience, we know that they haven't crossed the line, it's just it would be an interesting discussion to have in this movie about what is the line of journalism.
Yeah, of course.
I thought this was very well made, and I am very guilty of thinking Spielberg hasn't made a lot of great movies since Munich, or since his 9/11 trilogy, I should say.
Right.
Because I'm one of the, because I don't really care. I guess I'm joining the majority of, I don't really care for Indiana Jones 4.
I mean, I will say for Indiana Jones 4, just really quickly, the first 15 minutes are good.
The first third is really good.
Yeah. But, I think he's made, like, I think Lincoln wasn't my cup of tea, but I love Lincoln. Great.
I remember, and everyone's going to be shocked to hear this. When I saw Lincoln, I was so excited because I had been following the project for like years. And when I finally saw the movie, I was just disappointed. I thought it was just too much of a play. Like, you know, I mean, yes, this movie, the post is very much shot like a, structured like a play.
Yeah.
But I felt like this was too much like a play, or the Lincoln was too much like a play, and that there was just too many moments of people sitting and talking in rooms.
Yeah, well, the thing with Lincoln for me was, I mean, I think it's a really good movie, but the thing that, the only, like, criticism I felt was, I felt like I needed a history book to watch it. Like, I needed to, like, pause it and, like, look up who is this person, this historical figure? Like, why are they significant, you know?
Like, I thought I was watching a BBC special, not a Steven Spielberg movie.
Yeah, so, I mean, I still think Lincoln's good. It's just, I don't know, some stuff
And I don't mean to insult BBC specials. It's just I just didn't see like what was Spielberg about it. Like I was shocked when I reached the end credits and it said directed by Steven Spielberg.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I knew going in that Steven Spielberg directed it. It was just when I came out, I just totally fret. Cause it for just sure. wasn't. And of course I didn't really care for going back to other Spielberg movies. I didn't really care for War Horse or Tintin.
Okay.
And I really like Bridge of Spies. I actually really like that.
Yeah, Bridge of Spies. Yeah. But anyway, back to the post. Any final thoughts?
I think it's I thought it was an incredible movie. I thought, you know, I can't, I'm seeing the movie tomorrow night, so I'll see if it really was, if it was just a theater that had problems with calibration and the focus, because it was a problem at times to like see the movie, because a lot, like Tom Hanks would be sitting in a chair and his face would be out of focus. Like it's not like a blur. It's just you know how you have that, you know, you enter in that, you know, outside the shallow depth of field and it's just a little like separated in the, you know, how that background is a little separated. That's what Tom Hanks's face looked like in a few scenes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if
you could have been just here. What's that?
Did you have that at your screening?
No, no. Ours was at like an arc light. So like, yeah.
Okay. So, okay. All right. Cause I was just curious because I was just thinking half of the movie wasn't out of focus.
Yeah. They would refund you. They would refund you at Arclight if it was out of focus like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw this at a Regal Theater in Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I highly recommend The Post a lot. And actually, I highly recommend all the movies we talked about, but I think that I have a feeling that The Post will be the big hit of the weekend.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. I think so. I think it's hitting in a very prevalent feeling among us, the country right now. So,
very
relevant.
Mm-hmm. And I hope it does. And also, I kind of hope it does very well because this movie, even though it is a Oscar drama, it could technically have set up a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
Like.
Someone tweeted like, I like The Post, but I hate how it has like a stinger for The Post 2.
Yeah. And I know this makes me look bad, but I kind of would like to see Spielberg tackle Watergate.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yeah. But I digress. I really love this movie. I highly recommend it. And yeah, I think it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So Gene, is there any other movies from 2017 that came out recently, like that are that got a limited engagement that are now kind of opening up? Do you have any other smaller movies that you want to recommend before we go?
Not Bright. Definitely okay. Not Bright. But I will say, I really liked Lady Bird. That was a tremendously well-made film I really liked. Was it Don't Say With Your Moms, because I'll end up crying. I went with my mom, so that's nice. It's really good. It's like, if you went to a Catholic school like I did, like you get all the jokes in the film, and it's very, it's like a perfect encapsulation of that like weird high school culture that goes on in Catholic schools. So yeah, definitely check that out. I loved it. It's funny. Like it's really funny. I laughed like a lot in a lot of scenes, so many scenes though. So, yeah. Definitely check out what you read.
Yeah. I really liked Greta Gerwig's. I really liked her movie, and I think Saoirse Ronan is fantastic. And I saw, not to get off topic, but I promise I'll get back on topic in a second. But I saw I, Tonya last night, and
also, I haven't seen that.
And I thought Allison Janney did a very good job as the Tonya Harding's mom. But the thing is, I still would love to see Laurie Metcalf win the Oscar, the Best Supporting Actress Oscar.
Oh yeah,
over Allison Janney. And I really love Allison Janney, and I really liked her in I, Tonya, but Laurie Metcalf for me, I think, deserves the Oscar more. She's going through a lot of the emotions. She plays the mother of a strong personality teenage girl very well.
Yeah.
And believe me, as I was talking to Gene before the podcast, I kind of lived Lady Bird over the holidays. Gene, where can the good people find you? And didn't you do something on Bright recently?
Yeah, we did a Bright commentary. You could see it at the Waffle Press YouTube channel.
Awesome.
You should listen to the movie on mute and don't watch it.
Bright. Yeah, that's not a good movie. Sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah, and then find me, Gene 8892 on Twitter, Instagram, everything across the board.
All right. And all right. And you can find me at MovieKale on Twitter. You can also follow this podcast at The Youth Critic, and then you can also follow this channel at KHC Network. Gene, thank you so much for coming on the show. Everyone, please check out the Waffle Press. They are incredible. Him, Diego, and Nick do a really good show, put on a really good show. Check them out. And Gene, I will see you soon.
Cool. Thank you, man, for having me.
Welcome. Thank you for being on.
Thanks.
Professor Perlman. Thank you so much.
So nice. Très confiant.
I can show you around.
That'd be great. Thank you. So what do you do around here?
Read books, transcribe music, swim at the river, go out at night.
Sounds fun. All right, later.
Just watch. This is how we'll say goodbye to us when the time comes. Later.
Meanwhile, we'll have to put up with him for 6 long weeks.